This week's episode of Infinite Canvas Ultra is sponsored by Midwest Action. Midwest Action is a record and tape label as well as a blog based here in Chicago. Midwest Action showcases the best and brightest in the Midwestern music scene, covering genres of all types, from lo-fi garage rock to hip-hop, psychedelic rock, and more. Their newest release, Flowing Burial Ground by Eric Walgren, is out now, and coming out on October 20th is Lullaby for the Restless by Harvey Fox. Also coming up on October 7th, you can catch Midwest Action artists such as Diagonal and Happy Face, as well as Bear Call from San Francisco at The Owl in Chicago. For more information on these releases and shows, you can head to MidwestAXN.com or search MidwestAXN at Bandcamp. Midwest Action. Listen local. This is Daniel Fiorio.
And this is Michael Lane.
And welcome to Infinite Canvas Ultra Episode 8. The 8th episode.
We're getting close to 10.
I know.
And almost double digits.
You better believe the 10th episode is going to be a big one. I just realized before we started recording this what our 10th episode is going to be. It's going to be a good one. We'll talk about it off air in case Michael's forgotten here. But this is good. This episode itself is going to be a great one.
Yeah.
We got a lot of amazing things to talk about. Just this past week, going back to our discussion on Brockhampton, Amir Van has come out of the woodwork and released a new EP entitled The Manual. We're going to be talking about that. Also, Michael, you've got a video game to talk about, a film to talk about.
Yeah, I've been playing through Gears 5, which is the fifth Gears of War game, and I've been playing through that with my girlfriend, which that game came out a week or two ago, so I'll touch upon that, and also... We recently watched a little movie called Tigers Are Not Afraid, and I wanted to do a little mini review of that, so we're going to do those.
So expect that on today's episode, and then also to cap things off, headlining the episode, we're going to be talking about Charlie, the third studio album from Charlie XCX. It's going to be a good one, guys. Hopefully that really loud bike wasn't recorded while we were doing this.
Yeah, you definitely gave that guy a look as he drove past.
Yeah, and even if it is, let's leave it in. Yeah. Keeping it raw. Infinite Canvas Ultra.
Keeping it raw.
Keeping it raw. So as you can tell from that hyper-accelerated motorbike in the background of that intro, we are zooming off. We are just cruising this episode. It's going to be great. It's like the trajectory of Infinite Canvas Ultra. You can't stop us.
Wow, that
or
was,
that bike.
That was some quick thinking on your car right there. Taking... lemons and make it into lemonade.
Damn straight. That's what you gotta do when there's people who have to, you know, rev their engines.
Drive their very loud motorcycles.
10:32 in the morning. By the way, everybody, this is the earliest we have ever recorded an episode of Infinite Canvas Ultra. It's actually AM instead of, like, PM bordering on AM like usual.
Yeah. It's the earliest but also the latest we've ever recorded an episode. By that I mean it's 10:30 in the morning, but also we're only a few days before our posting, which is unusual for us. Usually we're pretty on top of it and usually like a week ahead, but
it's true. I kind of like it though. I think it's kind
of keeping current.
Exactly. Yeah. I actually kind of like this a little bit more in all honesty. It's because I feel like it's good not having a backlog, too much of a backlog where things are kind of, you know, maybe a little bit stale topic-wise.
Yeah, keep things fresh.
Exactly. Right. But yeah, how you been, Michael?
I've been good. Week? Yeah, it's been, you know, third week at my new job, third week at my new home. It's been a lot, and I'm still, you know, getting accustomed to everything, but I'm doing great, honestly.
Excellent.
You?
Doing great as well. Doing great. Been keeping extremely busy, and that's a good thing. Yeah. Last weekend had like so many shows that I was going to, which were great, and I kind of wanted to touch upon those this week because there were some interesting things that happened. Lots of artists that I saw within one weekend. Starting it off, it was I've talked about him before on the show. He's a UK rapper, Slow Tie. His new album, Nothing Great About Britain, definitely one of my favorite albums of the year so far. Big fan of him. He played at Sub-T, or Subterranean, for those not in the know, here in Chicago. Really great set, but, and you know, he played through the album, it was great energy, pretty, like, you know, a young UK rapper, kind of very hype show, very energetic.
Now, what is he in the realm of hip hop, you know, genre? Like, where does he fall? Like, is he more like who does he sound like?
I would compare him, if you're knowledgeable like of UK rap, I would compare him to somebody like The Streets or Dizzy Rascal. Hip hop, like with a kind of grime influence,
sure.
Like most UK rap. But it was great. It was a really good set, and it got extremely interesting towards the back half of the set. Probably with two songs left in the set list. So all of a sudden, Slow Tie, there's a balcony at Subterranean,
uh-huh.
and Slow Tie looked up to the balcony, and there was somebody in the audience who was watching from the balcony who just was being an asshole and was pouring beer on the crowd, or just members of the crowd, and people were getting upset, and Slow Tie had noticed this, and he looked up at the guy and, you know, said to him, "Hey, can none of that at my show,
right.
Don't do this,
that's a little too
a shitty
grimy.
Thing to do, it's a little too grimy. Oh, it got grimier, everybody. It got so grimy. This audience member then proceeded to pour his beer on Slow Tie.
So he was like above the stage?
Above, yeah, like literally above, looking over the stage, looking over Slow Tie, okay. And just, you know, pouring it right on his head. And then resulted in one of the most interesting things I've literally witnessed at a show in my life. Slow Tie then gets understandably pissed off and basically demands that this guy get brought to the front of the stage. And I had a direct view from where I was standing on this guy, a direct sight of this guy. So I see two dudes that are standing next to him on the balcony grab this guy and hand him to security.
I thought you were going to say, like, toss him over the railing or something.
Oh, it gets
that would be
it
awesome.
Gets way more interesting
okay,
than that.
Okay, okay.
So they hand him over to security, and Slow Tie is still demanding that he gets brought to the stage.
Right.
So security,
Not kicked out.
Security is bringing this guy to the stage, and he gets to the lower level where everybody on the floor can see him. Slow Tie sees him, and, you know, he's trying to bring him up. And as they're bringing him up, you pour your beer on him. So the guy gets brought up, and there's just multiple people pouring beers on him as they're bringing him up to the stage and bringing him up to Slow Tie. To which then he gets up to the stage, Slow Tie pours his beer on him, and then the guy tries to fight Slow Tie.
Wow. I thought this was going to end in, like, a street brawl.
It more or less did. It more or less, it ended with not a fight on stage, but at least from where I was standing, I was a little bit farther back on the floor.
Did you throw a beer on the guy?
I wasn't close enough, and to be honest, I really didn't want to get mixed in with that, because some things happened that I exactly expected to happen with that, so the guy, he didn't want to get on stage. Slow Tie wanted him to do that. I think just as a kind of, you know, you were being an asshole, but, you know,
publicly humiliate him and then, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell him off and whatnot.
Yeah, and then, yeah, this guy proceeded to try to fight Slow Tie.
So he's on stage at this point?
He was never on stage. He just kind of pulled at him off the stage because it was just a weird. It was probably only 2 minutes, but it felt like a couple minutes where everybody was just standing around and there was just total confusion as to what was going on. And I see Slow Tie kind of like hunched over on the stage a little bit, and you sort of hear him like talking and, you know, saying, "Oh, we don't do that. And then it's like DJ came over. And yeah, just, you see,
DJ starts throwing beers on him, or
more punches, and then, there's just people, you just hear a little commotion, and people just kind of, you know, getting a little erratic and going crazy, and inevitably, security then takes the guy, and then there's people trying to continue fighting him as security is pulling away, and that's why I did not want to get close, because
right.
I knew
someone's
that shit would happen.
Face,
exactly.
You know.
So, yeah, he's still arguing or, like, talking with the guy as he's being pulled away. They're finally reaching towards the exit, and the guy is just in a chokehold from security, face completely red, bloody, and there's just other people coming from the crowd that are trying to fight him.
Like, they're, like, following him. Yeah. Like, they're like, fuck this slow Thai show, we're going to fuck this guy up.
Exactly. It was insane. That's I have wild. Never, ever experienced anything like that at a show before. Now, it was crazy.
Could slow Thai have taken this guy, you think? If it was a street brawl, if it turned into that? Yeah.
Probably.
So, who, like, where my mind goes is, like, who the fuck is this guy who's just pouring beer? Like,
oh, I know.
Like, was he a fan of slow Thai? Did he just, like, show up at the show, I guess, and just, like, wanted to cause trouble?
I,
like,
really it's don't so know. I think random. He was just being a complete asshole. It was ridiculous. And then, sure enough, as I was leaving with my friends, I see the guy standing outside, and he's just talking to, like, a group of girls, like, just standing in front of some restaurant that's outside of the venue.
Telling his war stories.
Right.
And slow Thai.
Right. It was crazy. It was wild. Absolutely nuts. It's just super interesting that none of this has been covered in the press.
Sure.
And it's also really interesting, too, because he's actually opening for Brockhampton on their upcoming tour. And it's just...
He was featured on their latest record, right?
Yeah. I'm just really surprised about... Because I just feel like that kind of... behavior at a show in general is something that the Brockhampton camp would kind of steer clear from completely, because they're just so, you know, safe space, you know, just that kind of behavior just does not seem something like they would endorse. But it's interesting. Yeah. It's super interesting. I've never ever experienced an artist do something like that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really necessarily change my opinion on him in any way, but it's just, like, it was just super interesting to witness that.
It's kind of interesting to me in terms of the security actually not taking him out after doing that and actually taking him up to the stage is really weird. Like, that doesn't seem like what security should have done.
Right.
Like, they're just security's supposed to, you know, be the barrier between... instigation and fights and whatnot. And
exactly.
They're, like, literally bringing him up to the stage to be bombarded with beer and punches. And
exactly.
That's honestly bad security work on their part. But
there was even a thing at the, like, after it happened where Slow Thai commended the security, and I see a guy in security, like, give the thumbs up to him on stage. It's just like... wow. I mean, yeah, it's just such a weird situation, because, I mean, yes, that guy was completely in the wrong for what he did, but then also at the same time...
just kick the guy out.
Exactly.
Like, you know, it doesn't need to be anything bigger than it is. You know, when did this happen in the show in terms of, like, is this middle of the show, beginning?
Towards the end.
Towards the end, like...
Slow Thai had probably 2 tracks left after that incident happened.
They should have just... kicked him out. Like, was the guy doing that the entire time? Or maybe it's hard to tell if he was doing that the entire time, or...
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't... Nobody... than people that probably were getting beer poured on them, had any, you know...
What a belligerent fuck.
Like, notice that that was happening until Slow Thai called him out. It was just, all aspects of it was just super interesting. But great show. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, that whole thing made it even more of a wild experience, and I will never forget that. That was incredible. I've never seen an artist publicly shame and then get into a fight with an audience That's member wild. Before. It was now, crazy.
Now, I would use this perfect segue of banking off of Brockhampton to talk about Amir Van, but you also had another show to talk about.
Oh, yeah. These are definitely just kind of more brief.
So you started with the Showstopper.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing as crazy as this other one.
I mainly wanted to talk about that just because it's just so interesting.
Yeah, right.
And just something that I feel like nobody has talked about it at all.
Breaking news.
You're
on Infinite Canvas Ultra.
Slow Thai fought a fan at his Chicago date. Maybe he'll do that when we see him on my birthday, because you're going to see him when we go see Brockhampton on December 6th.
Hopefully that guy has been barred from coming to the Brockhampton show.
Then also a big shout out to Tropical Fuckstorm from Australia. Saw them at the Empty Bottle here in Chicago. Great show. They're just extremely weirdo art rock, endorsed by our guy, Anthony Fantano. He's given both their albums 8s. I agree wholeheartedly, as I normally do with Anthony Fantano. Mm-hmm. Great band. They spurred out of this other really great band from Australia called The Drones. It's kind of the after project of that band. And then ended up going to Riot Fest this past Sunday and had a really great time there. Saw the Village People, which is actually another interesting thing. There's been this meme going around on Facebook. Did they do YMCA? Yes.
And how many times?
They did it once, but that is also where the Wall of Death formed. So,
oh my God.
For those of you that don't know, there has been this ongoing gag since the Riot Fest lineup was announced, where there were two events created, the Circle Pit at the Village People, or
I saw that. I saw a video of that one.
Yeah. And those things actually happened, and I had to go watch their set just because, obviously, it's super funny, and I knew that the people that actually took part in being interested or going to these events would follow through. Not only did they follow through, but there was literally two people standing in the crowd for the Village People with signs that said, "The mosh pit for the Village People is here," and they just kept walking back and forth during their set. It was a spectacle. It was absolutely crazy. There was a huge conga line that formed in between the moshing, which I joined part of.
That's amazing.
Walked through the whole crowd while they were playing In the Navy and just high-fived people.
How did this happen? How did the Village People get at Riot Fest?
I think the promoters and just the bookers for Riot Fest have a big sense of humor and a huge sense of irony. So, I mean, they book Gwar and Andrew WK literally every year.
I mean, those make sense. That's true. Those stylistically make sense, right?
They make sense. But
especially for, like, the audience that you're capturing at a Riot Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And those are, you know, Gwar and Andrew WK are big names.
Right.
Village People is such a anomaly.
I think like the bookers at Riot Fest kind of realize that that act is such an untapped source of irony and people wanting to do what they did at Riot Fest that it actually makes sense.
Yeah.
You know,
do you think the Village People understood what was going on?
No.
No.
Not at all. I don't think they knew what was going on when they were on stage,
right?
Actually. Most of them had their mics cut off, but they were still singing into mics. They were terrible.
Yeah.
Their backing band was phenomenal.
I'm surprised Village People still exist.
I know.
Honestly. That I feel like they should have disappeared in 1985.
It was so funny.
This must be a reunion tour or something. There's no way they've been playing for 35 years.
From what I've heard, I think they consistently play shows in Miami and do like a bunch of small festivals. So honestly, this Riot Fest gig was probably a big deal in comparison to other gigs that they've played. Mm-hmm. But it was hilarious. Yeah, there was a circle pit that formed during during Macho Man, of course. And then there was a Wall of Death that formed. For those of you who don't know, Wall of Death is where, like, basically the crowd separates, and then at a certain point in the song, the crowd, usually the chorus of the song, just lunges at each other,
right?
Jumps at each other with force, and just start moshing, and that was so
funny.
Were you
in that?
No.
No, you just watched it. Just
yeah.
Observer?
Exactly. Because people were getting crazy. My friend Kyle, shout out to Kyle, he actually thought he had a concussion because he was getting into it, and there were people that were, I think he said someone tried crowd surfing and basically kicked him in the head during that, so
yeah.
it got pretty...
The first ever concussion at a Village People show.
It got pretty intense from what I've heard, but it was absolutely hilarious to watch, especially because... For YMCA, you know, they get into the chorus, "Fun to stay at the Y," and then everybody does the motion. I see these two girls jump into the middle, I think not aware that a Wall of Death was forming, doing the motions, and there's these other two women that went and just tackled those women, and then everybody else followed suit, just collided.
Are we sure that they weren't dead at the end of this?
I really hope not.
Jesus, that's scary, honestly.
I know. They were just completely oblivious to, like, what this actually was that was forming, and it was a spectacle. But also saw that day...
The Village People didn't bring anybody on stage to fight? There wasn't a Macho Man contest or anything?
Nothing like that.
Okay.
I wish. It would have been great.
Okay.
They did also, one of the funniest things is the main guy, who I think is the... police officer guy?
Sure. Is it Navy guy?
Maybe. But he basically did a thing where he introduced each member just as their character. And here's the cowboy.
Is that all it is? Yeah. Like, here's the Indian. Like,
what? Yeah, he's like, really? Let's give it up for the Native American.
Oh, okay. They've
changed.
Okay.
Got more in tune to 2019.
Sure, okay.
It's good. It's
honestly
good.
I'm kind of surprised. I would have expected... That's why I personally said Indian. I would have expected that to just be what they did, but they're getting accustomed to the 2019 landscape. Exactly. That's good.
It was hilarious.
Not to the Riot Fest landscape, though.
No, not at all. I would not doubt for a second that they get booked again for Riot Fest because of, like...
Do they take it? I mean, probably, because it probably is a
fair
pay.
Oh, without a doubt. I'm sure they probably got paid pretty well. Yeah. So, and those guys just... It was so sad. I mean, their band was hilariously on point.
Yeah.
It sounded better than what you would hear on a record.
They were younger guys or the backing?
They kind of just looked like probably skilled, maybe like mid-40s session musicians. Right. Who I'm sure if they ever get asked about this, they're probably like, oh, I play in the band for the Village People and probably get a good laugh out of whoever they're talking to. It's super funny.
So what else you see?
I got to see Jack White for the first time ever. The Raconteurs played, which that was pretty cool.
Oh, sure.
Saw the B-52's last Chicago show, which was pretty great.
Oh, wow. Are they done?
Yeah, they're breaking up. Allegedly, the three core members that are still in the B-52s all hate each other now. So
I was going to ask if it was just they want to retire or if it's they actually hate each other. That sucks.
It does. I have a fondness for the first couple B-52s records. Really great. Post-punk albums, super fun, contains the hits Rock Lobster, and that's kind of the biggest hit from that era. They didn't have Love Shack and
Love Shack later
until later on, so...
I think Love Shack and Rock Lobster are the only two songs I know by the B-52s.
Honestly, their first two records are absolutely worth your time and attention. Yeah. They're really good. Really, really good. And then capped the day off with Bikini Kill, the legendary... 90s Riot Girl punk band. Been a fan of them forever. Really cool to see them live. Really cool that they headlined the festival.
Really? Raconteurs weren't the headliners?
They were before Bikini Kill.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy to think Jack White wasn't the headliner for a day.
Yeah.
Honestly.
That's kind of Riot Fest's thing. They kind of will give the headlining spot to maybe a more veteran, act like that who... hasn't been around for a good deal of years and just reunited, so it's pretty cool.
They probably did My Bloody Valentine a few years back or something, right? Or
they've actually never played My Bloody Valentine's never played a festival here.
Really?
They've only just kind of done their own thing. They played the Aragon Ballroom. That's where I saw them at when they played.
Sure. So I would have pegged them as something like that if you're talking about veteran groups that come back.
I know. Maybe if they tour again, I could very well see them playing there. But it was a great time, really good weekend. Bring it all back to Slow Tie. We definitely should talk about that Amir Van EP. Amir Van, the...
Yeah, set it up.
...kicked out member of Brockhampton, who was kicked out initially, a lot of what the public was privy to is that he was kind of doing a lot of inappropriate... He was in, a pretty inappropriate relationship with the allegedly underage girl. And then what's spiraled since then is Claus did kick him out. It was pretty private, but up until recently, especially notably with the track Dearly Departed off of Brockhampton's last album, Ginger, with that track, we've kind of come to find out that not only was he involved in that, but allegedly also attacked loved ones of, or was involved in a jumping of friends of Brockhampton member Don McLennan, which kind of even sheds more light as to why he was kicked out, why it was such a difficult situation for all parties involved, and, just really shed a lot of light on him as a person and just what he was doing exactly. And he has been dormant for the last... basically a year and a half now, since this has happened. I believe he was kicked out probably May of 2017.
No, it had to be 2018. Had to be 2018.
Oh, yeah, duh. Yeah, sorry, getting my years confused.
It was directly after they got signed to RCA.
It was absolutely 2018. Because I mean, 2017 that was when Saturation Trilogy. Yeah.
Just get your years mixed up.
Yeah, exactly. But so he released an EP entitled "Emmanuel," which came out on Monday or Tuesday,
Tuesday or Wednesday last week. A random, it just dropped randomly. I guess there was a billboard that had come out in LA or somewhere, and then it was the next day it was out.
That was how I had heard about that first, because I follow him on Instagram.
Amir?
Yeah, his Instagram was absolutely dormant for the entirety of this happening.
He hadn't posted, but I had seen pictures of other people posting about him and posting with him on Instagram. I had seen a couple things floating around, so he definitely had been kind of making a slow comeback. But here's his comeback, or
his return. Yeah, sure. Basically. Yeah. I definitely think that, saw the Instagram post and promoting it was definitely interest peaked, because I wanted to see what he had to say on this and hear, what he's, I'm assuming, going to do with the rest of his career from this point forward.
Amir was a pivotal part of Saturation 1 through 3 and the creation of Brockhampton.
A founding member of Brockhampton.
He's been a best friend of Kevin Abstract, who's the main Brockhampton guy. They were best friends for a long time.
Exactly. I mean, it initially started him and Kevin.
Yeah.
So,
and there's a big following for Amir. People, really love Amir. And I, enjoyed him when he was in Brockhampton as well. So I've
been too.
Very interested to hear what this was all about. But.
And I see that he's been booking shows too. I think he's playing a show in LA. I forget what venue, but I saw that on his Instagram too. So he's definitely coming back. And the EP is very interesting. It's not necessarily something that I feel like I will revisit much at all, but it's interesting. I mean, it doesn't really make me view him in a different light or anything. I think he's still a pretty scummy individual, and I think what he did was very not good at all. Yeah. But it's interesting. I will say, though, I am glad that he is being active and has decided to record and put out material. I think that's a good thing. I think overall, though, it just feels like it's lacking a little something. I don't know if it's just in terms of, the production. I felt it was kind of hollow, or basically the rhyming to be a little one note, which is definitely a criticism that he faced when he was in Brockhampton.
He's always had a very similar flow, does the same thing kind of over and over again. And it worked in Brockhampton because he was surrounded by all these other different voices.
Exactly.
Whereas something where he's on his own and he's doing the brunt of the work here, you kind of get into a deeper spell of, okay, this is the same thing kind of over and over again.
It's literally front and center. You can't escape it. Yeah. You're not surrounded by a bunch of other personalities and
this is all
types.
Him. There's no features on this. It's all front to back him. But I will say I enjoyed it a bit more than I even expected. I think the first track is pretty it's intense, and
very
I think
much
it's
so.
And it's a very the beat, the instrumental is very low key. It's just there's barely anything there, really.
Kind of plays off like it's Amir Van's headspace, basically. Sure. You just get this kind of pulsing bass, and then him going on a very manic sort of tangent style, rapping style.
And it
just
almost
super interesting.
It's feels like he's almost trying to, apologize or tell his side of the story, but it doesn't get to the lengths that you want it to.
Yeah.
Like, he's definitely pulling back on it. Like, one of the things, and I watched Anthony Fantano's video on it, and he criticized it as well, is, one of the things is that Amir dropped this and he hasn't said anything, personally, right?
Yeah.
And that is a misstep, I think.
Absolutely.
He should, I think, whether or not he has, anything to actually say, you know, like, he should say something, and, you know, he did bad things, and hopefully he can grow as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, I'm glad that he has this output, and he has this venue to make his music and everything, but I wish there would be more from him
yeah.
as a person.
It, admittedly, that's also one of the biggest things that I kind of grapple with listening to this. It's like, and no, I don't, you know, I'm not one of those fans that takes this personally, the things he did, or feel like I can't support him because of the things he did. But in that context, the fact that he hasn't really apologized, and maybe he viewed this release as a way of
yeah.
sort of coming forward, it doesn't really work.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't work in that way, especially because
no.
like really only the first track kind of makes mention of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest are kind of, you know, regular hip-hop, you know.
Yeah, but also with him basically, like, there's throwing some insults towards Brockhampton
uh-huh.
on the track. I think it's Los Angeles, or it's either Lock 19 or Los Angeles, where he says I'm not a boy in a band.
Right.
You know, I mean, I feel like having to even
it's like a man in the world, whatever it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, having to even acknowledge or say that kind of just defeats any credibility I could throw towards this, because
mm-hmm.
it's like, you literally were involved in an assault of someone close to one of the members of
yeah.
Brockhampton. I just find that very much in poor taste. So yeah, I just kind of had a hard time connecting with this as a whole. And unless he actually did kind of put out a statement and an apology about it, it's, I don't know if I ever like will really connect to anything that he puts out
mm-hmm.
from there, but we'll see how this goes. I really don't think that anything will change in terms of how he conducts himself.
Sure.
I
hope so. I mean, it's definitely like, you know, he's young.
Mm-hmm.
He's our age, I think.
Yeah.
And he's obviously a troubled individual, you know, probably didn't have the best upbringing. And you could tell from his, you know, his lyrics throughout
yeah.
Brockhampton.
And on this, very much. But
hopefully he gets some help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would love to see him actually grow and reconcile with his past. Because he talks a lot about that. And even on Brockhampton, he was always talking about his past and his, you know, how much he used to do bad shit. And
yeah.
Well, he wasn't used to doing bad shit. He was still doing bad shit, at least in Brockhampton. If the you know, the thing with Don McLennan's friend is true, which it appears to be. So, you know, it's a fine. I actually thought the EP was fine. I really like the track Lock 19. I think that
yeah.
track is actually really good.
Probably one of the best ones on there.
But I also think a lot of it kind of melts together in terms of the other tracks. There's not a lot stylistically that changes. And again, like his repetitious voice, it just kind of drones at some
mm-hmm.
point. But he's obviously like pretty talented.
Yeah,
but,
definitely.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to connect with it, I guess.
Exactly. It really doesn't offer anything overly substantial unless you are just a huge, huge Amir Van
yeah.
fan or one of the people that thinks that, you know. I mean, Brockhampton has significantly changed without him. That was another really interesting line on this release where he mentions fans looking for the gutter, kind of talking about what he brought to
mm-hmm.
Brockhampton and how Brockhampton has kind of, well, definitely has lost that edge in losing him, but I definitely endorse Brockhampton's two releases without him. I love them. I think those are great, but yeah, this is just, it's an interesting release. Pretty hard to listen to in a lot of bits because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, just hearing him acknowledge what has happened and, you know, just kind of the pain in his voice with it, it's pretty... It's one of those things where it's, you're kind of exposed to too much, I feel, and it's kind of blinding. It's a little hard to listen to in some spots, but overall, it's interesting.
Yeah.
It has me intrigued as to what happens next, but as a whole, this is just not something that I feel is, you know,
mm-hmm.
really substantial.
Yeah.
It's like I said at the beginning, it's not really something that I... we'll probably revisit, other than maybe Glock 19.
Yeah. I kind of have the same sentiments. I think I enjoyed it more the first listen, just because I had I don't know. I still have this kind of like desire to hear more from him, I guess. Like even with like the allegations and everything and how, you know, kind of awful of a person he was a good voice in Brockhampton, and I enjoyed his work there. So
yeah,
the first time through I was a little more up on it, and then I you know, listened through it again and was definitely fell into a trap where it was just like, all right, yeah, Glock 19's good, and the first track is kind of a standout just for how different it is and you know, what he's talking about.
Oh, but yeah.
Everything else, Pop Trunk, like, Pop Trunk's okay, but, like, the last three tracks are all kind of...
Yeah.
Eh,
especially
fine.
Sunday Night, like, that song is just so forgettable.
Yeah, yeah.
But...
Yeah.
If you were to rate this, what would you rate it?
Like a 3, or not, I was thinking, like, out of 5, like a 6 out of 10.
Yeah. I'd honestly probably give this more of, like, a 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's fine for what it is, but, I mean, just, there's really just nothing there.
Yeah.
In all honesty, it's, again, like, there's really nothing that I would ever really want to revisit, but I do think that its existence, the fact that it was made, is super intriguing, and I'm very curious to see what the future of just this release in general holds for not only Amir, but if Brockhampton are going to say, any of the members of Brockhampton are going to say anything about this.
Yeah.
They've been pretty quiet since it came out, so.
Yeah, but they probably just, you know.
Probably are just gonna shrug it
away
off.
From it, yeah.
Yeah, and that's probably for the best in all seriousness.
Yeah.
But shifting gears, from music to a whole nother.
That's a good segue, actually. Yeah.
To a whole nother topic of nerddom that we always talk about on this show.
Yeah.
Talk about some video games.
This is a video game minute.
Absolutely. But in particular.
Which might do a little bit more than a minute. But yeah, I've been playing through Gears 5, released, I think, on the 10th of September or something like that. They have a weird schedule now, like where they give the game out early if you have Game Pass, and it's weird.
Before you go in, how long ago was it that the fourth Gears of War came out?
Fourth one, I think, was like 2015 or 2016. I never actually played 4. I played the last Gears of War was 3 for me, which came out, I think, in 2011.
Mm.
And that was, like, the breaking point. That was basically, like, the original Star Wars trilogy, right? Like, it's, like, the New Hope through Return of the Jedi, right? It's, like, the first three games, and then, like, the fourth and fifth and what is supposed to be the sixth Gears of War game will be, like, the... It's like the kids of, you know, Marcus Fenix and everything. Everything's always connected. It's always kids of somebody. And, yeah, so I haven't played a Gears game since 3, and I didn't play 4. So I went into this one, and I've been playing co-op with my girlfriend, who hasn't played any Gears of War game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been kind of interesting just to play it in terms of the story. Although it's been pretty easy to just like kind of pick up and play and get accustomed to what's kind of going on. It's kind of more of the same old shit as you know, Gears of War. Have you ever played any of
them? I haven't.
No. So like basically the premise is like weird offshoot version of, I don't know if it's even Earth or whatever planet, and there's these locusts is what they're called. This like at this underground dwelling like basically like extraterrestrial race that is waging war against humanity. And that is on like the first three games. It was like, we're gonna finish the fight, last one, you know, we beat the locust, I think, as far as I can remember. But of course they come back, right?
Yeah.
And so the fifth one is kind of you know, venturing on that path, and you know, it's the Marcus Fenix, who was the main character of the first three games. It's like the fourth game was definitely focused on his son. And the fifth game actually makes a interesting turn where JD, who like was the main character in the fourth one and the son of Marcus Fenix, kind of becomes a shit heel in this game. And you start out playing as him. Like, he's the main character in the first act. And he like ends up trying to, you know, kind of save the day, but actually ruin, like, actually does a really shitty thing, and he kind of has to come to terms with that, and you end up then from then on playing as a different character, Kate, which is, I think, actually the first time you've been able to play as a female character in the story. At least this is like maybe the first one where the lead was a female character.
I've seen her in all the promotions for
this game, and it's really interesting because she actually has like visions, so she's actually you begin to learn that she maybe has some ties with the Locust army and, like, maybe has some weird heritage there or has been, you know, injected with something. Like, some reason why she's seeing these weird visions of the Locust Queen and whatnot. And it's actually, like, really interesting in that way. But otherwise, like, outside of the story, which is totally fine, and actually, like, the character work and everything is actually pretty well done. This is another Gears of War game.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's kind of actually, that's totally fine, because I haven't played one in 8 years. And so, for me, it's like, you know, I'll run around and rev my chainsaw and cut a dude in half. Like, that's pretty fun fucking shit. Fun. You know, and I feel like the Gears of War style of third-person cover-based shooter has really gone to the wayside.
Yeah.
You know, in the last, like, basically in this generation, like, there are still, like, The Division is a big one. That's a big cover shooter. But in terms of, like, marquee third-person action games, like, Gears of War, the first one, it, like, revolutionized the third-person shooter, right? And, mm-hmm. and for the entire 360 generation, if you were a cover, or if you were a third-person shooter, you were kind of in the mold of Gears of War. And now, like, that those games kind of don't exist in terms of, like, a linear, story-based third-person shooter in like, how Gears is. And it's kind of actually, it's almost refreshing.
Yeah.
Just because I've been away from that for so long.
Seems like a nice change of pace. And it's cool seeing that in video game franchises, where another big example would be God of War, where they...
Well, I was going to make note of that, like, whereas the new God of War, which actually, it's funny because God of War, Gears of War, they're both the GOWs. God of War, the latest one, had, like, such a big turn, and it was, like, unlike any of the other games, whereas Gears of War, Gears 5, is really just such a... It's just another Gears game.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
But it has, like, different... It kind of... Well, what I'm getting at with the comparison between those two is I feel like they've kind of adapted in a way where God of War definitely is a bit different, but still kind of maintains its roots a bit. It's, it's interesting seeing these changes in these big franchises where, to where they're kind of more... because I feel like both those franchises are kind of like relics of the last generation of games. It's cool seeing it kind of branch out and be a little bit something different.
Yeah, no, I've been enjoying it a lot where... I think I would say we're probably about 85% of the way done. We're, like, very close. And it's been really enjoyable, and I'm sure that they're going to set up another, you know, Gear 6. It's got to be a trilogy, of course. But no, it's interesting. They actually, in this game, they've introduced less linear levels in terms of, like, the second and third act are kind of open world-esque, where they're, like, side missions, and you have this... vehicle called the Skiff, which is like this wind-based vehicle, kind of like a glider or something, and you kind of go around the world, you know, going to your main missions, and there's also little side objectives. It's not, you know, too much out of the way of, you know, it's not like a big grand world that, like, feels lived in or anything. There's, like, actually nothing out in the world except for these little side missions.
Yeah.
So it's kind of bare bones in that way, and it actually kind of takes away from a little bit of my enjoyment, where I'm like, I could have just gone to the next mission. I didn't need to... Like, you could have just, like, spawned me at the next mission instead of, like, having me drive across this entire landscape.
Exactly.
But no, it's good. I've been enjoying it a lot. It's, like I said, more Gears. Yeah, I think that's kind of all I got. You know, maybe we'll check in once I finish it. But also, I do have to mention, and I don't know if you know this, but in the multiplayer of Gears, they put Batista in it.
Yeah, like, I heard about that.
Dave Batista is in Gears of War, which is, honestly, he is the perfect... If they were to make a Gears of War movie, he's the character.
Exactly.
He is your main character for that movie. He is a literal human... real life version of a Gears of War character.
He looks like the dude from the cover art
right.
for the first one.
Yeah.
I know, like, next to nothing about that franchise. So I don't know what that character's name is, but
that's Marcus Phoenix, who is voiced by John DiMaggio, who you might know as Bender and from Futurama.
He absolutely should be in a
Is
an upcoming Gears of War film. He should be in it. And if he's in it, it'll probably be a really good video game movie.
Yeah.
Batista has a
awesome.
Pretty incredible track record.
Yeah.
Would you recommend our listeners to play it?
Oh yeah, yeah. Especially if you have an Xbox, it runs pretty well on a base Xbox One. And if you have Game Pass, obviously download it. If you don't, sign up for Game Pass. They're always giving Game Pass away. Do you know what Game Pass is?
Yeah.
Kind of it's like their subscription service. It's like $10 a month, I think, and every single exclusive game from Microsoft goes on to it day one. So like you can pay $10 a month and play Gears 5.
It's excellent.
So yeah, if you have it, if you don't, like, I would recommend if you've enjoyed a Gears game in the past to check it out.
It's awesome.
Have you been playing anything before we get off this?
Haven't really had time lately.
No. I did also finish Control. Great game. I can't wait to hear your thoughts. They did actually patch it recently and it plays extremely better on a base PS4. It like almost never has any frame rate drops.
It's awesome.
Which like before it was like 50% of the time whenever you were fighting an enemy, it like almost crashed. It was so bad. But now it's perfectly fine, so I can't recommend Control enough. I think it's phenomenal game. And I also finished Man of Medan.
Nice.
Which is the follow-up to Until Dawn.
Yeah.
And pretty good. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. It I think the ending was a little kind of with Until Dawn as well. Like I feel like they've always had like a hard time finishing a story, or like it's kind of a little more abrupt than I want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was a really cool story. Pretty good like twist in it, and all the characters were fun to play around with. We actually, none of our characters died out of the five
awesome.
Characters, which was really awesome. But I'm really interested to go back into it and play it again, and you know, maybe have a couple characters die off in the next time, because I want to see what happens. But
be cool. I'm excited to play that.
Good stuff. Good games. Looking forward, there's like every game is coming out right now.
Mm-hmm.
Borderlands 3 just dropped, which I don't care about. Whatever, Borderlands, I don't want to play that.
Yeah.
As much as I'm talking about how much I am loving the new Gears, as much as it is the same as the old Gears, I do not want to play a Borderlands that is exactly the same as the old one. But yeah, Death Stranding has had a lot of gameplay coming out, and I'm very excited for that. And there's a lot coming forward, so I'm sure we'll check in with video games a lot moving ahead. But
absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's kind of all we got at the start here. This is a long intro for us. We usually don't go this long, but
I like how loose and like, you know, kind of lax this
episode. Yeah, it felt good.
That's how we do it for the first morning edition.
Yeah, this might be how it goes moving
forward.
But you want to take a break and
we're gonna take a little break, and Michael's gonna come back with a review of Tigers Are Not Afraid.
Yeah,
stay tuned.
Originally debuting in 2017, Tigers Are Not Afraid is a remarkable Del Toro-esque horror fantasy film that I truly cannot recommend enough. This imaginative, affecting, and notable Spanish-language Mexican feature from writer-director Issa Lopez comes to the U.S. courtesy of horror-centric streaming service Shudder, and it's another channel-exclusive win for the emerging service. Tigers Are Not Afraid follows a ragtag group of parentless children barely scraping by in current-day cartel-infested Mexico. In the slums where these children reside, the cartels are a constant presence in everyday life, and are the cause for the orphaning of our prepubescent heroes. Tigers Are Not Afraid anchors its story on two children in particular, Estrella and Shine, whose individual stories are as devastating as much as they are fascinating. But perhaps even better are the committed and impressive performances from their respective actors, Paula Lara and Juan Ramon Lopez. Much like Guillermo del Toro's most revered output, Pan's Labyrinth and the Devil's Backbone, Tigers Are Not Afraid is more interested in conveying its potent themes and underlying symbolism than in attempting to scare you, although it definitely has its fair share of disturbing and unforgettable imagery. Tigers Are Not Afraid is a phenomenal film that gets high regards from me. I'm scoring this one an 8 out of 10.
Hey Michael, I got a question for you.
What is it, Dan?
Do you like nostalgia?
I don't.
No?
No, just kidding, I do.
Yeah, right?
Of course I do.
Everybody loves nostalgia.
I was born in the 90s.
Exactly. Things were
innocent.
It's
what we lived for.
We were children during that time, so of course things were easy and good. But you know what else nostalgia brings?
What's that?
Memories of incredible films and music and video games.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of which have now are now reaching 20 and 10 years old.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We're coming on some big anniversaries for some monumental pop culture stuff.
Exactly. So what better way to celebrate those birthdays than doing in October 1999 month and in November 2009 month?
Yeah.
Where it's just as it sounds, we're going to be talking about some of the best in media, film, music in 1999 and 2009 in October and November, respectively.
Now, what are we going to be talking about specifically, Dan?
Well, highlighted in each regular episode of the show, we're going to be covering four films for each month. The list for our 1999 film retrospective series is The Matrix, Being John Malkovich, Iron Giant, and The Blair Witch Project.
Man, those are some good-ass movies.
Absolutely.
At least they were back then. Let's see how they hold up, right?
Absolutely. And then in 2009,
we are going to be looking back upon these 2009 hits, such as 500 Days of Summer, Jennifer's Body, A Serious Man, and of course, Inglourious Basterds.
Gasp! It's going to be great.
On top of that, we're going to be doing some little extra episodes, right, Dan?
Absolutely. What I'd like to call Infinite Canvas bonus content for the first time, because we can't really pack... Well, frankly, I don't want to devote an entire episode to just talking about something from 20 or 10 years ago.
Right.
But it's the month. It's the theme of the month. So expect bonus episodes the following Friday, every week. Examples of some of the stuff we're going to touch upon in 99 and 2009. I'm going to do a top 10 list of albums from those respective years.
I'll do a retrospective on the 20th anniversary of the Dreamcast, one of the greatest systems of all time.
Absolutely. And a bunch of other stuff that we either haven't come up with yet or just don't want to tell you about. So expect that. October and November. And remember, October 1999 month, November 2009 month.
Yeah, look forward to it. It'll be a lot of fun.
It's going to be fun. It's hard to believe 5 years have passed since Charlie XCX has released a proper studio album. The pop futurist's last record, Sucker, came out in 2014, but she certainly hasn't been quiet since that album's release. In 2016, she released the 4-track Vroom Vroom EP, and in 2017, she released the number one Angel and Pop 2 mixtapes, all three of which redefined Charlie's sound and vision as an artist and exposed her to a larger audience that may not have seen an appeal in her earlier material. We are now at a point where we can see where this material has been leading to. That point of destination is Charlie's aptly titled new album, Charlie. With 15 tracks and clocking in at 50 minutes, this is the official reintroduction to the beloved artist that fans have been waiting for. Armed with a catalog of features such as Troye Sivan, Lizzo, and Haim, just to name a few, and a lead-up to the album, which has included incredible singles such as Gone, 1999, and Cross You Out, does Charlie live up to the levels of anticipation its mastermind has created for it?
Hell yeah.
100% agree.
I love this album, without a doubt. It is weird that you say that Charlie XCX hasn't had an album in 5 years, because she's been like one of the most prolific.
This is only her third album.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's ridiculous.
She's been everywhere in the 5 years since she's technically put out a studio album.
Between like Vroom Vroom and then Number One Angel and Pop 2 all coming out within like the span of like a year and a half. On top of that, she's... Honestly, in 2018, she dropped singles throughout the entire year, most of which don't even end up on this album. And they've always, like, she's just been getting better and better, I think.
Absolutely. And a lot of that actually had to do, she was supposed to release a record in 2017, but unfortunately it had leaked. Allegedly, you can find it as a download. I think it's called Charlie's World.
I have found that. I have listened to that before.
Yeah. And that was supposed to be the third album, but then that whole plan got utterly kneecapped because of the leak, and she scrapped all of it. And now we have what we have here today, Charlie, which maybe that was for the best, because maybe that, judging by what it inspired her to create from there, I'm very happy with the results.
Same here.
It's amazing. I think that the flow of this album is airtight. It flows together super well. And I think it's easily the most, it's both the most accessible and most ambitious material she's created ever existing under one album. Yeah. And I really love that about this record.
Yeah.
Because there's some tracks that, and some of my favorites on here, such as Thoughts and White Mercedes, which I feel like are very, it's not material you would find on a record made by her contemporaries at all. And that's exactly why I've loved Charlie for as long as I have, because I've always seen that in her, and it's just full force on this record, and I love that about it.
Yeah, I can't agree enough. I think front to back, this is a very cohesive record. Very few songs that I think are, you know, not worth anything. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think this is a pretty phenomenal album, and it's really great to see her actually have a, you know, a major release like this.
Yeah.
You want to just talk like through some of the songs?
Yeah, let's go through the track listing. So it opens with Next Level Charlie, which is, I love the title of that. I love the meaning behind that title, because this does feel, I mean, granted, we kind of had sight to her quote-unquote reinvention. If you look at the artists that made albums like Sucker and sorry about this, but I'm totally blanking on the name of the very first one.
Yeah, what is that one? I don't even know.
It's a
True Romance.
Which
True
Romance. I very much like Sucker. I think True Romance is kind of not that good. You look at that version of Charlie XCX and then what we have here, and I mean, it's even also apparent in the cover too. She looks like she's being formed in like some type of like alien environment.
Sure.
She has this like weird pink strips kind of like going for like around
metallic,
her body.
Like, yeah.
It feels like a rebrand, a reinvention of her, and it's great. I think that track is such a great intro not only to the record but this new era of her career.
Definitely.
And then we go into what is, I think, probably a top five favorite song of the year.
Oh, yeah.
One thing I want to say about this record, and is a sign of, I think, any great record, is that I already love the singles going into this, but I really, really love all of these songs now.
In, like, a
in the
cohesive,
context of this record. If anything, it's, I actually go back to those songs. I mean, that could be just a testament to how much I've been listening to this album recently. But I appreciate these songs significantly more than I did when they were just singles.
Yeah.
And I love them even more in the context of this record. And Gone is absolutely, it's just bliss. I love that song.
I think that might be my favorite song of the year.
It's a great choice.
It's definitely the best pop song of this year.
It's so sticky. I can never get it out of my head. The Christine of Christine and the Queens performance on there is so great. I love how Michael Jackson-esque it is, like her inflections and just the way she performs over that instrumental is, I'm just constantly amazed by her performance on that.
And you're not a big fan of Christine and the Queens,
right?
I'm
not. Like, I absolutely love it. It honestly makes me kind of, like, question things of, like, maybe I should,
you
go,
should go
back,
back
and listen to her.
You should go back. Listen to Chris.
Yeah.
Really great record.
Listen back to her record. Yeah, like you just mentioned Chris. It's amazing. That song is incredible.
I from the first time I heard Gone and then seeing it performed like the day of at Pitchfork, the day it came out, and it's just been one, like, a song this year that I can't get out of my head.
It should also be significantly bigger than it is.
Yeah, this song should be everywhere.
It
and
really
I don't know why
should.
It's not.
It's better than, and this definitely isn't, you know, it's not just me being like, ooh, music elitist guy who knows what's really good with pop, but like for real, this song should be, it's better than anything that is number one on the charts, I assure you.
Yeah.
And it's kind of criminal that, and it's also like one of the things I kind of discuss is like, why isn't she is like to that level? I'm happy she's not, because like to me, Charlie XCX, and much like definitely one of her contemporaries, Carly Rae Jepsen, like, I love that we're in this era of pop stars for the indie crowd.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's almost sad. It's like, it's kind of sad that, like, a wider audience doesn't embrace her.
Yeah,
or
like, she,
Carly Rae, as much as some of her contemporaries.
You'd probably say that Charlie XCX was bigger in her sucker years, right? Like, yeah. She had much more of a... We would see her in ads before movies, right?
Like, yeah, at the movie theater. Boom Clap on, yeah, which was a huge hit.
What's the one song? Crash My Car Into the Bridge.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. Iconopop, which, yeah, she wrote.
Yeah. She had, like, some of her biggest songs back then, and I don't think she's had... Like, there have been songs here and there, like Boys was a pretty big one for her, but, like, nothing to the extent that those, you know, Boom Clap had. And I think there are songs on Charlie and in the last few years that could totally be big, you know, friendly radio pop hits.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why, you know, she doesn't have like as big of a mainstream following. She's definitely future pop and out there and experimental, but
still at its core, I feel like, yeah, you have the most accessible fundamentals of pop music.
Like, how is 1999 not one of the biggest songs of the year?
Seriously,
right?
Especially in a year where nostalgia and, like, especially nostalgia for that year, we're actually doing an entire month dedicated to shit from it. But
I should soundtrack our ad with 1999.
Oh, I want to do that, actually. That would be great. We should just, like, intro every episode.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, no, it's... That song should be huge.
Yeah, Gone should be huge. You know, you think of...
The track with Lizzo.
Lizzo, yeah. Blame It On Your Love should be huge, especially with how gigantic Lizzo is right now. Like, she is, you know, she has the potential and the grand stage effect that I think Charlie XCX should be at right now.
Exactly.
Not to say, you know, of course Lizzo deserves it as much as anyone else. Lizzo's great, but... And it's crazy to me that Charlie doesn't have that.
That's probably the one song, in all honesty, that I could see maybe getting pretty big radio play, but we'll just have to wait and see on that. And more to that track in a minute. So going back through the track listing, then we got Cross You Out, which is a huge favorite of mine.
Same here.
I love its lumbering, kind of lethargic beat.
Mm-hmm. It's very, like, dark. And yeah. Like, it's like a dark synth pop, like that really bassy, grimy synth,
mm-hmm,
lead that's on that is really great. The bass and the drums on that one are really great. I love Charlie's performance on that.
Right.
Like,
it sounds like something that honestly wouldn't be out of place on, like, the Drive soundtrack.
Right,
or,
exactly.
A movie that has a very, like, synth wave.
Right, where I was going.
Soundtrack,
yep,
to it.
I think Cross You Out is one of my favorite tracks on this. And I've actually heard a fair amount of people I know who actually really like Charlie XCX and say that they don't like that track.
I'm honestly kind of not surprised, because I feel like she's kind of appealing to a different audience with that track, and it's more my kind of...
Sure.
Or basically our,
yeah,
speed, which I can see with people who... Yeah, maybe some of her other fans, I just feel like that's not really a subgenre of pop that they,
sure,
would really want to delve into, and that's a shame, because... It's awesome.
Yeah, and I think Sky Ferreira's part on it is really good, too. I think that track is one of my biggest highlights.
Absolutely.
Same with the next one, 1999, which
incredible,
is such a fun song.
Absolutely.
Troye Sivan kills his part.
Oh, yeah.
I just love all the, you know, as much as we talk about loving nostalgia, you know, he talks about, like, you know, NSYNC and wanting to be JT and be with, you know, it's so much fun. Such a fun,
yeah,
track.
It makes me, I don't know, like, it purposely, and obviously it's the song's intent, it makes me just think back to being 4 years old, like I was in that time, and,
yeah,
maybe seeing NSYNC and boy bands and, mm-hmm, shit on the television,
right,
like they talk about in that, and it's great. And also not only that, but I mean, if you look back at pop from that era, it sounds like a track that could have came out around that time, in all honesty, mm-hmm, which is amazing.
Now, actually, I'm looking at the Spotify listing right now, and that has over 130 million plays on Spotify.
That's awesome.
Which is...
It's pretty big.
Really, yeah, that's actually really big. That's her biggest one off this record, for sure.
I'm not too surprised.
Makes sense, yeah.
It's also been
like
around the longest,
yeah,
I think, out of all of these tracks.
For sure.
And then,
but I'm glad to see it has that play. So it probably is playing on radios out there.
Yeah. And then after that, we have Click, which I love that track, too.
Same, yeah.
I love the kind of, like, warped vocal melodies, mm-hmm, that Charlie has on that track. It's one of those instances of... it. As I said before, this album strikes such a balance of weirdness and accessibility, and...
This track is a really good example of that.
It's both at the same,
right,
time, which is really cool, because... You get I would say the accessible moments on this album are definitely tracks like we just talked about before,
mm-hmm,
like 1999 and Gone. But yeah, this is a perfect marriage of both of that. I think that track is absolutely incredible. After that is Warm featuring Haim, which actually might be my least favorite song in this album.
It's one of my least favorites, which is so sad because, and I also, this was one of her singles before the record came on. Even then I was, you know, it just, it doesn't have the impact. And I love Haim, and I, you know, they've had really great features on, like, Vampire Weekend's album and everything, and I want, you know, I love their last record, and I think they're a really great artist, and Warm is just kind of, I feel very lukewarm about it, you know, it's,
yeah,
it's just kind of there.
It's super underwhelming.
Yeah.
The instrumental isn't all that memorable. A lot of the vocal performances on it are just kind of whatever. But, I mean, it doesn't... It's not necessarily something I would feel the need to shut off.
No, ever, definitely not.
But it's just, in comparison to a lot of the tracks on here, it's...
It doesn't stand out
at all. It really doesn't. But after that, and I feel like I'm... The track after it, though, Thoughts, is legit maybe one of my favorite songs on this album. I think it is so just weird, and I absolutely love the hook on it. I love the vocal melody of it. I think that track is great, especially for a non-single track.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely is one of my favorites. I absolutely love it.
This is kind of like the a bit of a turning point for this album, when this album gets a little bit more slow.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the next track, Blame It On Your Love, is a more of a upbeat one, but Thoughts and a number of the tracks after that are very melodic and very, you know, I don't know where I was going with that, but maybe, yeah, just very melodic and slower and introspective, and it's really great tracks from there.
A necessary breather moment for the album, and it's great. It's so compelling because of it. Really love that.
Yeah.
And then going back again to Blame On Your Love featuring Lizzo. Super fun.
Yeah, I've grown on this one a lot. This was one of the first singles from this album. I think it might have been the one after 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And Blame It On Your Love is interesting because it was actually... It's almost like a remake of... it is like a remake of Track 10, which came off of Pop 2.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when it was Track 10, Blame It On Your Love was a... Like I was just saying, very slow, very... sparse instrumental, and you know, very weird auto-tuned vocalizers and everything, and here it's like a party, you know, radio friendly hit with Lizzo.
Absolutely.
And it's a lot of fun.
It really is.
It's a really great way for Charlie to like turn this song into you know, something that more people will probably resonate with.
Absolutely. And Lizzo's feature on there is very short, but it's very sweet. It's great.
It makes a little bit of an impact. It's pretty sticky. I'm even like thinking of it right now. Like, I could go through that entire thing, but
yeah,
it's a great track.
So then we got White Mercedes, Silver Cross, all solid cuts.
Mm-hmm. White Mercedes, I think, is one of my favorites.
Yeah, same. That song is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I Don't Want to Know an Official. Official is great. That's such a great ballad.
Yep.
And going back to highlights, this track after Official is a huge, huge highlight.
Yeah.
Shake It. I love that song. It is so goddamn weird.
That one,
it is so great.
That's a low light for me, but I expected you to love it.
Yeah.
Just because of how out there it is. There are things here that I do like, but I think the song is so, like, oddly put together.
Sure.
And that's probably what you love about
it. I love
it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It didn't resonate with me too much.
It's super... Okay, so I'm going to take a little bit of a dive into why
sure,
I like this song. So, like, not only just the unorthodox structure of it, I think, is great, but I love how Charlie isn't even really a vocal point on this. She just necessarily sings the hook, and then she has Big Frida, Cupcake, Brick Candy, and Pablo Vittar just do their thing, and it's just this like super just dark but like sexy track that is just like, I don't know, I just picture dark clubs, neon lights whenever I hear this, and it's great. It's just so much fun. It's just such a weird oddity that at its core is like a very dumb, sleazy song, but it's pulled off in such an amazing and just unique way that I have just so much admiration for it, and I just think it's great. I really love that track a lot.
It's fun, too, because it's like a, it's almost like a reunion for them, because they were all featured on a track on Pop 2.
Right.
I Got It, which is actually one of my favorite songs off of that album, or mixtape. So I was kind of sad to not, you know, like this one as much, but, you know, it is what it is.
And then after that, another, actually I would deem kind of a low light for me for this album is February 2017. Mm-hmm. I think that track is just kind of, there. It's a little bit too airy.
Yeah.
It's a little too non-impactful.
The ending is like a little kind of just hooked on there.
Yeah.
Like, the song kind of ends and then it has like a feature at the end. Like, I think it kind of actually goes silent and then it, I don't know which one it is, Clyro or Yeji.
I believe it's Yeji, because Yeji's whole thing is kind of more of a house electronic style, and that's the direction it takes.
Yeah, and they come on and do their little part. And yeah, that's another low light for me.
I honestly, you could, in my opinion, take that just completely out of the track listing.
Yeah.
I feel like it really wouldn't affect this album at all.
I definitely agree.
Actually, I take that back about Warm. I think that might be, like, thinking about it now and discussing it, I think that might be my least favorite track on this album.
February 2017?
Yeah. Just because I feel like it just really adds nothing to this record.
Same here. I think it would probably be my least favorite, too. Like, as much as I'm not big on Shake It, at least that song is memorable and has, like, you know, interesting verses from Cupcake and Brooke Candy and everyone. Whereas February 17 is, it's like you said, it's just kind of there.
Mm-hmm.
It is totally something that could have been cut. It's kind of weird that it's actually on there.
Yeah, I think it would have worked just as a one-off single.
Yeah.
Maybe not even then, because, I mean, there's really nothing to it that makes me really want to revisit it. Well, I mean, that's not true. I mean, whenever I play albums, I always let them go all the way through, so...
It's funny, because I think two of the last singles leading up to this record were, I believe, 2017 and Warm. And, like, when those came out and I listened to them, I was kind of like, is this one gonna be good?
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, I liked Blame It On Your Love in 1999 and Gone so much. And then there were, like, other tracks, like February 2017 and Warm, where I was very... I don't know about this, but I'm glad that the rest of the album came together as much as it did.
Definitely. And then...
including the finale here.
Which is great.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. It's also
2099.
The counter to 1999.
Yeah.
2099, the last track, the 15th track on this album, also featuring Troye Sivan. Very dark, very...
Futuresque.
Yeah, definitely paints a vision of a bleak future as opposed to a hopeful one, which is super interesting.
I love Troye Sivan's hook on this. I think it is so moody and, like, intense.
Yeah.
I think the song is really great. An awesome closer to the album and a really good opposite effect from 1999.
It definitely
really
is.
Really plays off of that song really well.
But it wraps everything up in a nice bow, like, for an album that kind of has conflicting feelings, largely positive, but kind of has, like, this sort of dark undercurrent to a lot of the tracks. I love that this track just goes full out pretty bleak for a pop track, and it's great. It's a very interesting, very bold way to end this album. Bold way to end a very bold album. Absolutely.
And a great one.
What would, so I got two questions for you. First off, what, in an album that is riddled with features, what would you say is your favorite feature on this?
It's Christine and the Queens.
Same.
That's for sure the best, not only feature, but like I said, it's probably my favorite song on this album.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget her actual name, Lauren Hightesser, something, she's French, of Christine and the Queens. She does such a phenomenal job.
Oh yeah.
On this track. And really brings it to the next level, I think.
It was really good track placement, too, having it be the second song in the album. Mm-hmm. I think it really...
Especially after Next Level Charlie.
Yeah.
It
hooks you in so well and just, you know, presents a amazing ride to come after it. And then...
You said Christine would be your favorite as well?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And then what would be your top three favorite tracks on Charlie?
I'm gonna go... Ooh, that's tough. Gone, obviously. I'm probably willing to say cross you out. And then I might be stuck between White Mercedes 1999 and Click. One of those three that are all very separate, very different stylistically tracks, but those five songs were definitely my biggest highlights, I think. You?
For me, top three would have to be in no order. It would be Gone, Thoughts, and 1999.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Nice.
I love those tracks. I think it's just overall just a phenomenal album. If I were to score this, I'd give it like an 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I would totally give it an 8.5 as well.
Yeah,
Um,
those are.
even even with the few songs that are a little lesser, but the song, the 12 tracks that I think are really great
Yeah.
are, like I said, really great.
And it's low moments, they're not appallingly bad by
Sure.
any means.
Even
They're
February is fine, but
exactly. They're tracks that while listening to this album, I'm not gonna skip past them, I'm not gonna shut them off. I don't mind them whatsoever. So it's yeah, just it's great. I would probably go as far as to say maybe my favorite thing Charli XCX has ever done, even in comparison to those two extremely stellar mixtapes.
I don't know. I really love Number One Angel a lot,
It's a great pick. It's a great release, but
but
I think she just hit such a great stride on this, and just as an album, I mean, just front to back, this thing is expertly made. It's so good.
I can't wait to hear what she's got next.
Absolutely.
Well, maybe she takes a break for a little bit because she's just been putting music out for, like, it seems like she never stops, honestly, but
Seriously, she
we'll see what
deserves it.
happens. Yeah.
Absolutely. But no, I'm not disappointed whatsoever.
8.5 across the board from us here at Infinite Canvas Ultra.
Exactly. And as far as I'm standing, best pop record of the year so far.
Probably. Yeah. Probably same.
Absolutely. We're going to take a short break and then we're going to get to Q&A and do some shout outs, wrap this week's
Close
episode
this one
up.
out. We'll see you in a second.
As always, we here at Infinite Canvas Ultra love to hear from our adoring public. You can find us on Facebook at Infinite Canvas Ultra, also same thing on Instagram, and our email always is infinitecanvasalt@gmail.com, and you can also tweet at us on Twitter at @ICUltraPod. You can find me, Daniel Fiorio, on Instagram at _dojo, DOJO, Daniel, _, and Twitter, DojoDaniel126.
And you can find me, Michael Lane, on Instagram and Twitter at MikeLaneIsMe.
Give us your thoughts on the new Charli XCX album. Ask us about, just whatever you want to talk to us about,
Yeah.
or
Send us
call
a
us out on
question or
something that we've said before on the show if you want. We'd love to always have a dialogue with you
maybe
guys.
the guy who was kicked out of that show is listening to our podcast and wants to
Yeah.
talk about it. We would love to hear your story.
We would love to hear your story. We'll even have you on the show if you want. Yeah, probably not.
Probably
I'll
not.
probably pour beer on us.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys, always reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Welcome back, everybody. Infinite Canvas Ultra, episode 8. And we're closing out this week's episode like we always do with Q&A. And this week's question comes from frequent question asker to the show,
Every
Jose, our
week.
man. We love
We
you.
love it. We don't need to start attributing these questions to somebody else, so people start th stop thinking that we only have one
I know.
listener.
If anything, it's an invitation to the
Yeah.
fan base to up their game, ask
Exactly.
questions of these caliber. Because, I mean, we sort through questions every week and we pick out the best of the best to be featured on the show. Can't dedicate time to all of them, unfortunately. But we
Yeah.
thank you for anybody that's contributed a question to the episodes week in and week out. We really appreciate that. But Jose asks, what is your favorite song or piece of music created for a film or favorite film soundtrack? Which is a great question.
You want to go first, Dan?
Yeah, I think one that always comes to mind pretty glaringly for me and is a movie that we have talked about till we're blue in the face on Infinite Canvas Ultra is well, I'll split up into two parts. Basically, the entire soundtrack by 103.6 Never for Good Time, but in particular the track
Watch Good Time
yes,
again.
Watch Good Time, but the track The Pure and the Damned from which is the The last track on the actual soundtrack to the movie, it's Lanathric's Point Never and Iggy Pop, and it is a extremely dark and just glaring song that is totally perfect for that movie. It's actually played during the end credits of that movie, and to a great effect. It's great seeing the final scene and, you know, resolution to that film with that song playing. So that would be one of my top picks. Another, like, just favorite altogether soundtrack for me would be the Trainspotting soundtrack. Incredible. I have a very big fondness of 90s British alternative rock, mm-hmm. and that is predominantly featured on that. And I also gotta give a shout out to the score to It Follows by Disaster Piece.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack. I love that thing. Just pure 80s synth dark wave worship and super good.
Yeah, I got a couple. I really love the track Anyone Else But You from mm-hmm. Juno when Hell Michael Cera yeah. and Ellen Page sing that. That's a fun one. I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith for the... not really. But that's really crazy that Annihilation, right? I think it's Michael Bay's Annihilation had I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. Ridiculous. Don't You Forget About Me? I don't know if that yeah. was actually written for The Breakfast Club, but like you can't mistake that song for anything else.
Oh, exactly.
But just being from that movie, right?
Just automatically picture Bender just walking through the football field,
yep, fist in there.
Freeze frame.
Big one for me is the entire soundtrack for The Graduate.
Absolutely.
Which, you know,
one of my favorite movies of all time. Course.
You know, Scarborough Fair and Mrs. Robinson and everything. That is a really great album and a really great soundtrack to that movie. Everybody's Talking for Midnight
great
Cowboy.
Choice. Absolutely.
You know, that song really punctuates the Midnight Cowboy throughout the entire thing. It probably plays more. It's that song is in that movie a lot, but great song, great movie. Yeah, I think that's kind of, you know, outside of, you know, obviously Good Time. I almost said Gone Girl. Good Time and
Gone Girl, also a great soundtrack by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Yeah, yeah. another one that comes to mind is the Goblin soundtrack from Suspiria,
definitely.
From Dawn of the Dead. You could pick out a Goblin soundtrack for a lot of old Italian horror films, but those are always a favorite of mine.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks, Sam, for the question, Jose. Always bringing some bangers, for sure. Yeah. Especially being that we're both, you know, film and music nerds. Right in our comfort zone.
You know, I actually have one more, and I recently rewatched this movie, Princess Mononoke.
Oh.
And I love Joe Hisashi, the composer for a lot of Studio Ghibli films. Those movies always sound fantastic.
Absolutely.
I really love those very soft piano ballad work that are in those movies. Yeah, that's what I've got.
Definitely. Thanks again, Jose. Always great to hear from you.
Thank you.
And, you know, always email us at infinitecanvasalt@gmail.com. Or just, you know,
send us a question on Twitter at
@theultrapod
or hit us up on Instagram at infinitecanvasultra. Send us a question.
You know
reach out. You got our numbers. If I know you, text me a question.
Text me something.
Not going to give out my number here, but if I know you and you know my number, text a question if you want.
Maybe one day we'll create the Infinite Canvas Ultra Hotline and you can just take all your
like
messages
there. Like the bat phone or something.
Exactly. Reach out. We always love to have a dialogue with our audience on the show. And then we're just going to close out with some shout-outs as we always do.
I have a great shout-out, and it's to me for drafting my great fantasy team this year, man.
Ooh.
I'm 2-0. It's going great. I'm the best team in the league right now. Most points out of anybody. And it's looking good.
Killing it? Doing good?
Yes. Eduardo's going down this week. Everyone's going down the rest of the weeks. I'm going to win this fantasy league. That's it. That's what I got for my shout-out. What about you, Dan?
I think I'd first like to give a shout-out to, and this is also just another thing we could talk about briefly, I'd like to give a shout-out to David Robert Mitchell and his very slept-on movie that came out this year, Under the Silver Lake, which I actually just got around to watching this week. If you're familiar with that name, that's the director of It Follows. This is his follow-up to It Follows, and boy howdy, is it weird, but that's
it's
exactly why
movie.
I love it. It's
yeah.
like a very David Lynchian mystery thriller comedy about
it's like a neo-noir, like you said, David Lynch mystery film where like the main character, who's Andrew Garfield, is like almost like a he just gets into some crazy stuff in you know, downtown Los Angeles. Very fun film.
It's great. It's on Amazon. If you have a Prime account, give it a watch, give it some love. That movie certainly didn't really get any love. A24 kind of just pushed it out into the world after delaying it twice, and it's really unfortunate because it's great. It is not for everybody, but give it a shot. It deserves your time.
It's excellent. Watch that and watch Good Time. Yes. As always, watch Good Time, but also watch Under the Silver Lake.
Right, and I could very well see this also being in my probably honorable mentions for like movies of the year when we get to the end cap of 2019.
Oh yeah.
Got any other shoutouts?
I don't think so. My fantasy team's great. That's all I got.
And I'd lastly like to give a shout out to my friend Zach. Known Zach since kindergarten. We love Zach, and today is Zach's birthday.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Happy birthday, Zach.
Happy birthday, Zach. Shout out to you. We're recording this on your birthday, so a little dedication and shout out to Zach.
Hell yeah. Rock on, Zach. We love you.
Absolutely. But yeah, Infinite Canvas Ultra, episode 8, another one in the books. We'll see you guys next week.
See ya.
Once again, this week's episode of Infinite Canvas Ultra was sponsored by Midwest Action. From Harvey Fox's upcoming release, Lullabies for the Restless, here is Brain Dead.
Hey. You gotta wake up. I am waking, lying, brain dead on the freeway. Drove the wrong way, down a one way, and I wound up on the ceiling singing. Anything at all.